Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today we have returning guest Jenny Holiday. Jenny writes some of my favorite novels, such as The Bridesmaid by Erin Bradley series, The Matchmaker Bay series, and her latest, A Princess for Christmas, which is best described as a Hallmark movie with steam. In this interview, I invited my friend Eddie Yoder to join us as we chat about Jenny's writing process in the midst of the pandemic, what's her source of inspiration, and of course, some book recommendations. Now let's go, Jen. Hi, Jenny. Welcome back to the What You Read Next podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. We have Eddie Yoder joining us in the conversation. So Jenny, tell us how you're doing. How are you managing the pandemic?
Well, I guess, you know, there's two answers there. One, I'm lucky that I live in a place where it's mostly under control and nobody's lost their job in my household. But, you know, on the other hand, I have spent 6 months doom scrolling and trying to get work done with all my beloved family right in my face. And school is opening here in a couple weeks safely. I live in a place where that's not really I'm concerned, but that's not really a major concern. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
I will be too. I think Addie's kids are in the school train too. So we're excited about having time back to do your own thing and just getting some me time.
Go ahead.
It's okay. Mine got on the bus this morning. Today's our first day of school. Woo! Yeah. So I kept saying, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for school. I'm so excited for school. And I think people kept looking at me funny, but my kids were so much more excited than I am. Oh, yeah. And I was like, no, they want to go. Just send them.
Yeah, it's been, you know, I work from home normally, so it shouldn't be as much of an adjustment as it has been, but boy, it's been a long slog.
Yes. Yeah. So let's talk about your writing. Addie, do you want to take this next question?
Yeah. What is your work schedule like while you're writing, especially with everyone being home?
Well, The pandemic answer to that is that it's kind of work happens whenever I can manage it. And, you know, if you have you have kids, so you know the sort of constant tightrope of the screen time guilt, but the beauty of the screen time that frees up time for you. So it's all been kind of a big balancing act. But I will say that my big pandemic hack was to... I only have one kid, to tell him that he could stay up as late as he wanted if he was reading, which he, I think, initially thought he was getting away with something. And I guess he was, because I wasn't making him go to bed. And I bought him a Kobo. We're in Canada, so Kobos are more common. So I bought him his own Kobo, but it's attached to my account. And I basically took a chunk of the vacation fund that was canceled and empowered him to buy his own books, but the receipts come to me. So I get these, like, I wake up in the morning and I get these receipts that say, you know, Spy School, book 6, purchased at 10:45 p.m. So anyway, he stays up really late and reads, and then he sleeps late. My husband and I get up at the freaking crack of dawn and try to work as much as we can before he gets up. So I actually get, like, if I'm disciplined about it, I get a good 4 or 5 hours before he even wakes up. So I'm like, you know, I feel like I've invented the hack of the century here. But school is starting, so that's going to be the end of that. We're already rotating it back.
I'm putting that hack in my pocket. I'm keeping that one.
Yeah.
I think that sounds like a smart hack. Like, you know, well, you're reading. You're not just, right. You're not screening. You're reading.
So that's the thing. So, like, if say he stays, I mean, I don't even know how late he stayed up at the peak of it, but if he stayed up for 3 hours after I went to sleep, during the day, those 3 hours would be a struggle to fill, you know, like, he'd want to play Minecraft all the time. But when the trade-off is sleeping versus reading, it's suddenly a different calculus in his mind. So I've manipulated my child to suit my scheduling needs, basically, is what I'm saying.
It's our job as parents to do things like that.
I love this. So do you have like any interesting writing quirks or any things that are just kind of like your things that you do and you're like, this is kind of quirky or this is kind of unique to me?
Well, I don't know if it's really that unique. Like, I don't have any, like the actual writing is not that interesting. I kind of mostly just sit down and write a book from beginning to end. But, and I'm not really a music person in general. I don't usually listen to music while I write. So I don't do playlists. But what I do is have one song that's sort of like the theme song for each book. And I listen to it a lot while I'm, not literally while I'm writing a book, but in the time period that I'm writing, it's on in the car, etc. And then I usually get to a certain point in the book where I do start listening to music while I'm writing it. Like this is sort of like the finish line, the sprint toward the finish line. And I put the song on repeat and just listen to it over and over and over and over and over again. And then when I finish the book, I pretty much never listen to that song again. But it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like hype music. It gets me to the end.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love the, you know, you got your hype music and maybe you do a playlist like of your hype music that you're never going to listen again. You're
well, like, I do. I have a playlist. So I add it like each time I add it. So I have a playlist that's like the song from each book. And I do sometimes listen to it. But,
yeah.
And I actually once made my agent listen to it when we were in the same place. I was like, I put it on shuffle and I was like, there's one song for each book on this playlist. See if you can figure it out. And she actually did. She got them all right.
Yeah.
How long on average does it take you to write a book?
It wildly varies. I don't really have a standard answer. Some books are easy and some books are not, and I don't know why. Like if I knew why, I could probably standardize it more than I can. But I would say usually I need 4 to 5 months for a book that is like in a series where I know what's going on. But I have written books as fast as 6, 7, 8 weeks. Paradise Cove is the fastest book I ever wrote. But it's kind of all over the map. I wish it wasn't, but.
Yeah, I feel you. Let's chat about your book. So let's talk about Paradise Cove, which is the latest release of Matthew Mercury Bay. It's a friends and lovers between a town doctor and Jake, the mysterious lion guy. We have to pass. And what sparked this, you know, you mentioned this is like the easiest story that came to you, to spark you, the story. What sparked that idea to write the story?
Well, the series started with a book called Mermaid Inn. And the idea for the series, before I knew anything else, I had this idea of this woman who inherited this kind of bonkers inn in this town she didn't want to be in. Mm-hmm. So I knew that that was going to be kind of the anchor for the series and that we were going to be seeing the series through her eyes, seeing the town through her eyes. So then I started thinking about like who's in this town. And one of the answers that sort of popped into my mind right away was like some kind of silent fisherman dude. And I don't really know where that came from. Or silent carpenter. He was originally a carpenter, but then he also became a fisherman. But he, you know, and I knew that he was sort of like damaged in some way, but that was kind of all that I knew when I sort of conceived of the series. As I wrote book one, I started to sort of figure out what book two was going to be about. And book one took a long time to write, like objectively, but part of the reason it took a long time to write was because I joked with my editor, I was cheating on book one with book two. Like I would write little snippets of book two, even though I was supposed to be writing book one. That doesn't really answer your question. I don't know. I just had the idea of this sort of silent wounded guy who everybody knows and loves, but kind of just leaves alone and lets him do his own thing in his corner over there because he's so wounded, you know?
Yeah, I love the Mikia, by the way. The beauty salon, she has a pixie haircut, which we don't see that often in romance. And right. He has long hair, and they meet, they connect. You know, like, you both need to get to know each other. Like,
yeah.
That's so unique.
I did start with that that scene. That was, I say that I usually write books from beginning to end, but the beginning often ends up changing. But that, I sat down day one, wrote that scene. That was kind of in my head already. And I do kind of, it's kind of a bummer that there aren't people on the covers of these books, because I would have liked the short pixie cut and then the man bun dude. It would have been an interesting, as you say, you don't see that so much in romance.
Yeah. And so we have a town doctor. She comes in from major city to work in a small town to pay her down her debt. Like, is that something, is that a program that happens in Canada? Like,
there is, in fact, a program. So we have socialized medicine here. So like single payer, you know, government healthcare. Doctors are independent business people, but they essentially, they're billing the government instead of people's insurance companies. Mm-hmm. So there are government programs to get doctors to places where they may be more needed, small towns, rural areas. And there is actually, like, the area where this book takes place, it takes place in a fictional town, would be eligible for those programs. I actually think the town itself, if it existed, it's too nice of a place to really, you know, have trouble attracting professionals. But that's just like a little romance, you know, fudge. So yeah, there is a program where if you go to an in-demand place for a few years, the government forgives your medical school loans.
That's exciting. Awesome. Addie, do you want to talk about A Princess for Christmas?
Yes. I loved A Princess for Christmas, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad.
You're welcome. So I gobbled it up, and it's my first Christmas book of the year too. So what was your inspiration? Was it really fun to write it?
Yeah. So this one actually has like a more distinct story. My dad, who lives in the States, so I don't see him that often, loves Hallmark Christmas movies. And like, what's the other one? There's another network. Like, it's not just Hallmark, but he loves that genre of Christmas movie. And he just like gobbles them up, and he emails me about them, texts me about them. And I like them too, but we don't get the Hallmark channel in Canada, and I just don't, I don't know. It's not like an anti-TV snobbery thing. I'm just not really, like, I'm a book person, not a TV person. So I don't really watch TV. But when I go home for around the holidays, which I usually do after Christmas, I usually go by myself without my family for a week between Christmas and New Year's. Obviously, that won't be happening this year. We sit and we watch them. And he is just like, he is the best. He's so funny because he can never figure out what's going to happen. He'll be like, oh my gosh, how is this ever going to get resolved? And I tease him. I'm like, Dad, you know, obviously it's going to get resolved. And then often he'll be so just speechless at how it's going to work out. And I'll sort of like troll him a little bit. I'll say, well, clearly there's going to be a ball, and that cranky butler is going to turn out to be the matchmaker, and, you know, or the hero's dad is actually Santa, you know, because he works in this mysterious workshop. And he's like, what? So I, at one point a couple years ago, thought, what if I like tried to write one of these as a book, but I made it more fun for me, and I guess more, I wasn't like trying to make it on brand on purpose, but, you know, I don't write really sweet closed door books. No shade to that. It's just not really my thing. So I basically, the elevator pitch for this book was that it's a Hallmark Christmas movie in book format, but with a lot of sex and swearing.
That's basically how I've been describing it to all my friends. I'm like, it is a Hallmark movie, but with steam.
Yeah.
And like, so I just keep passing it. Like, go read this book. Go read this book. So for me, I'm like you. I prefer a little bit of an open door. And so it was just like, just right. Is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, and I like a grumpy hero, which is not really a Hallmark thing.
Mm. But Leo was really good.
Yeah, he was.
Like, as a grump. He was a good grump.
Thank you. I enjoy a good grump.
Do you have a favorite Christmas book or Christmas movie?
Oh boy. There is an old, I'm not going to be able to come up with the name of it, but there is an old Harlequin, it's not that old, Harlequin historical that's probably from the early 2000s by, I'm thinking of her one pen name that's not the other pen name. Really good answer, Jenny. I don't know the title and I don't know the author. I'm going to think of it as I tell you what the book's about. It's one of those like lovely category historicals from Harlequin where you know kind of, you know, they're short and they're the conflict isn't too dramatic, and it's about a nobleman and a regular woman who are, for whatever, you know, romance reasons, that's what Sarah McLean calls it, for romance reasons, renting rooms adjacent to each other in this inn, and they can hear each other through the wall. And that's basically like the whole setup of the book, and it was totally lovely. And it's by maybe Michelle Young or Anne Lethbridge. It's by Anne Lethbridge.
Okay.
And I kind of, my introduction to romance was through Harlequin Historicals, and it was one of the first romance novels that I ever read. So I have like a soft spot for it because of that, I think.
Both series and both books, actually, Paradise Cove and A Princess for Christmas, had this theme of grief with Jake, right, and with Gabby and Leo, not Gabby, with Marie and Leo both. What brought that into your stories? That's kind of personal, but
no. Well, there's not a big personal answer, so it's not really personal. I think the answer is a bit different for each book. I feel like when in romance, the death of a parent is pretty common, and I feel like, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's kind of a cheat in a way, right? It's a way to create some trauma that will propel a character arc, you know, because if we all start out like enlightened and self-aware and mentally healthy, we wouldn't have really a story to tell. So the death of the parents is, I mean, I definitely had them both have a dead parent because they both have that in common, and that becomes a way that they bridge their differences. And by differences, I don't just mean economic differences, but they're kind of emotional differences. So I feel like that's kind of, for lack of a better word, normal in romance, and was a bit of a way to just sort of advance the story. Paradise Cove, I think, is more like permeated with grief. And I've gotten a lot of questions about this, and it's making me laugh because I didn't really do it on purpose. But now that I'm in the phase of marketing this book, I'm like, woo, this book's all about grief. It's really sad. You should buy it, you know, especially given our current circumstances. But I don't have a great answer for why I did it, other than I just sort of, like, Jake just kind of, I don't mean to sound like woo-woo, but sort of came to me, and I just knew that he was so sad and that this was why. And the book sort of wrote itself, so I just ran with it. I didn't set out to, like, write a book about grief. I just set out to write a book about him, I guess, is my non-answer.
I can't imagine him having a different pain either. Now that I've read the book and I know Jake, I feel like I can't imagine that there would be a different situation for him. It just feels right. Is that twisted? That
no,
his I'm loss glad. Feels right.
No, I feel the same way. I feel the same way. I mean, and it's not like I'm, you know, to get back to your original question, it's not like I haven't had grief in my life, but this book wasn't, you know, I don't have like a good answer for this was about getting over some kind of grief from my own life. It really wasn't. I just made it up. But I will say one more thing. I'm not saying that I do this on purpose or that I'm good at it or anything, but I do think as a reader, I think I appreciate books that are fluffy and fun and aren't super angsty, especially right now. But I also appreciate books that kind of like, you know, that feeling of when you read a book and it sort of tears your heart out and mushes it up and then like shoves it back in, and it's sort of painful, but you kind of enjoy it. That's something I enjoy as a reader. So maybe I decided subconsciously to try to do that myself.
I love it. I love how you were able to approach like a rich story that it was not just a small town romance. It's set, you know, in this lake town. It was like, there was actually pain, there was inning, so I was like purpose, but it wasn't about miscommunication or about, like, you know, like, oh no, they have to break up. Like, they're actually, there was a backstory for the story.
Right. And I sometimes enjoy, like, I enjoy romance as a reader sometimes that is not super conflict driven or that is driven by external conflict. But when mm-hmm. I write books, I really want the main conflict to be an emotional one. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be like a contest or, you know, there may be some thing that's driving the plot or that's putting them in each other's paths.
Yeah.
But I want the actual like conflict to be not solvable by fixing the external stuff. You know what I mean?
Yep. Totally.
So I read Matchmaker Bay and I have The Bridesmaids Behaving Badly on my shelf.
Right.
So I see a theme of series and trilogies. Is that something that you plan going in? Or do you get into the first one and are like, oh, but I like all these people?
No, they're planned. And part of that answer is to do with how you're publishing. These books are published traditionally by, like, you know, New York publishers, and they are buying a series. So I have, you know, in each case, written a proposal that goes into quite a bit of detail about the books in the series. So they know what they're getting and I know what I'm on the hook for. Having said that, I do like the Bridesmaid series has three novels and two novellas. And it was contracted for three novels only. And then we added one of the novellas because there was sort of a shuffling of publication date. And we wanted something to kind of bridge a longer gap between the publication of two of the books. And then the second novel in that series, which is actually the first novel, I just kind of accidentally wrote. So it's not that there's not flexibility to add things, but for the most part, they were conceived of as series and contracted as series.
So A Princess for Christmas, is it a series?
It is. There's two more coming.
It's less of a series.
I mean, the words, you know, I feel like sometimes I don't know what the word series means. It's less of a series than my other books. There's one book coming out every year at Christmas for three, or in the fall for 3 years. The second book is about Max, Marie's friend. So they're in the same world, I guess, but they're not as tightly connected as those other two series that you referenced.
I was hoping Max was going to get a book. So.
Yeah. The idea behind that, those books is like, there isn't a series title, you know, because it's not really like one town or one group of friends, but yeah. The idea is that you're returning to this kind of universe once a year for Christmas.
I love that. So both of your books, mainly most of your books are open door and you just had it. You write Hallmark movies or scenes.
Yeah.
With you. What is the process to write these scenes and how do you get in mood? Is it harder to write? Is it easy to write? What's the process like?
You mean sex scenes?
Yes.
I don't think I really treat them any differently than regular scenes. I want them, maybe even more than regular scenes, to be doing a job for the book, like to be advancing something. I don't want it to just be a sex scene. And that comes from, I mean, that's kind of like writing 101 for romance. But it's because I, and again, this is just like totally my subjective taste. I'm not a fan of like erotica. I just find it kind of boring. And maybe this comes back to my idea of conflict. Like, I want there to be an emotional underpinning to everything that happens. I don't always succeed at that, but that's what I aim for. So I want a sex scene to do something for us besides like titillate us. So in that sense, it's kind of not any harder or easier than any other scene because there's kind of a point to it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm like, ugh, sex scene. I'd rather just like let them banter forever. But I don't treat it that much differently than any other scene. And actually, sometimes when you're trying to like trick yourself to, part of my writing process is like, I know I have to deliver a book by a certain date and it has to be a certain length. And it's always fine. I've never missed a deadline. And I always end up completely overwriting the book before it's due and having to cut it. But I always go through this like panic that I'm going to not have enough to say. I'm going to fall short of the word count. And sex scenes I find easy to like, they're longer. They just end up longer. So I sometimes, when I'm in them, I'm like, ha ha, I'm adding thousands of words. And then they end up getting cut anyway. But
that's amazing.
So we know we're getting more Christmas books. And yeah. We have one more Matchmaker Bay.
Yep.
Do you have any other things in hidden away that you're working on? Things that you're plotting that you can fill us in on?
I do, but I don't think I can fill you in on them. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's exciting just to know.
I hope to have some news on that front soon, but it's too soon to say. But yeah, two more. Max gets a book next, and that's my favorite book in the series. I don't know if it will be other people's favorite. It's a little bit less like the princess book. I tried to be super tropey, like, you know, oh my God, there's a princess, she's hailing a cat. Like, I tried to make it as sort of over the top tropey as I could. The second book is maybe less so, but it's my favorite in the series. Oh, I shouldn't say that. The third one isn't even started yet, but I really like the second book. And then the third book is going to be about, do you remember Mr. Benz, the uptight equerry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be about him. Woo! And which is, everybody, as it's, I didn't do a very good job. Everyone thinks it's going to be about the guy in the log cabin, Kai.
Oh, yeah.
Right? No.
You dash our hopes.
Well, as I was writing book, so this kind of goes back to your previous question. Like, the books are contracted and they're you know, the publisher purchases them based on a synopsis. And as I was writing book one, I was like, oh crap, maybe I should have like made book three about these people, like the bar owner Imogen. And you never know. But no, it's going to be about the uptight man behind the throne who's quite by the book and doesn't like, you know, any kind of modernization. And then the management consultant that they hire to come in and overhaul the watch industry, who comes in with all her new fangled business consultant ideas.
That's always a good enemies to lovers like vibe.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And then the third Matchmaker Bay book is also enemies to lovers, which is my favorite trope to read. I don't think I'm as good at, I don't think it's my best trope to write, but it is my favorite trope to read.
Love this. Yeah. I've been looking forward to the third book in the Matchmaker.
You know, so have I, but dang, it was tough to write. Like it's like, I'm really good at marketing, but what I'm telling you is like, temper your expectations. No, I'm kidding.
You've been setting them off for the past 2 books. You just know it's gonna be.
I know, but it was actually the hardest book I've ever written. I don't know, something, it just wasn't coming together. I mean, it's done now, but so okay. We'll see.
Do we know when it's coming?
It's coming March 2021. It is coming March 30th, 2021.
I feel like March is an exciting month for books. Like, I feel like lots of people are saying March, March, March. So better get my reading self ready.
Yeah, and maybe we'll be in a different world by March. I mean, I'm not holding my breath, but
yeah, I don't know. I think we'll be in a, we'll still
we'll be in the same world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. So, all right. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. Addie, you want to take the first question?
Yes. What is your favorite place to read?
In bed, just like laying down in my bed. I don't, you know, that sounds, I don't know, either boring or titillating, and it's neither. It's just, well, maybe it is boring. It's just, I think it's from when I was a student. I was a student for so many years, and I just like lived in crappy apartments or had roommates I didn't like. And I just would like lay down in my bed and read. And now I think it's because I spend so much of my day sitting that I want to, like, when I'm not at a computer, I want to like extend my body straight. So I should probably just read standing up. But
your son is going to be the same though, because now you've created this habit of.
Yes, right.
Reading. Yeah.
Well, you know, my mom was a librarian. She was a children's librarian. She's retired. I'm talking about her like she's dead, but she was a children's librarian when I was a kid. And she did the same thing. She was big into like, we could read as long as we were reading. She didn't really care what we were doing. So I did a lot of like hiding in my room reading. So I think it just imprinted on me.
My kids are about to get a whole new world on the weekends. They're going to be like, you're going to what? Yes, read everywhere. Go.
Yeah.
I love this. So hardback, paperback, ebook, or audiobook?
What's your ebook for sure. Yeah. I can still remember when I got my first ebook. I actually have a Kindle and a Kobo, and I have like a complicated system for what I read on what. But I can remember when I got my first e-reader, it was a Kobo, and I got it just before I was going on a vacation, like to a resort. And I was going back to the same resort I'd been to a few years ago. And the first time I'd gone there, I packed a carry-on size suitcase full of books. And then the second time I was like, I don't have to do that. Like, it's all here on this one device. It's magic. So yeah. And I would much prefer to read on an e-reader. And then, you know, speaking of middle of the night reading, if you wake up and you can't sleep, you can just pop it on with the no light required.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, audiobooks, I'm embarrassed to say I have never listened to an audiobook except parts of my own, because I feel like I should. Just not an audio person.
That's okay. It's not for everyone. So, what has been a book you read this past year that you love or you're writing about?
Can I give you two?
Yeah.
One is too hard. Okay, so I think my favorite book so far of 2020, probably joining a chorus here, has been Alexis Hall's Boyfriend Material.
So good.
Yeah. And the other one is not out yet, but really loved Olivia Dade's forthcoming Spoiler Alert.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, actually, I haven't thought about it like this, but I feel like both of those books and both of those authors have a way of writing like funny, rom-commy, you know, smart, witty books. But then there's also like an underlying, I don't know how to say this. Like, I'm not a critic. There's like a humaneness or like a sort of deep care that you can see that the authors have for their characters. Like, people are not necessarily kind to each other, but there's just, I don't know, there's a care in those books that seems like really rock solid.
Yeah, I read both of them and they're fantastic. I read Alexis Hall, thanks to your recommendation from the previous show. And you said,
oh, hey, right. And so I'm the one for owning.
Yeah. So, and I got to speak with him and he was amazing. It was like, totally like awesome. Like, his thought process and how he comes about with these stories are like, it's a great way to look at it. So.
Oh, I don't, is this one of your podcasts?
I'll have to listen to
it. Yeah. That's right. I did recommend, How to Bang a Billionaire, I think is still my favorite series, that series. But yeah, I find his writing to be like funny and frothy and all the things we love about rom-coms, but then also so like, sort of, like I said before, like sort of devastating in a way, but in a good way.
Yeah. It was just like, it was delightful. Like, I had laugh out loud. I fell in love with a couple. I loved the fake dating and just like the whole British rom-com and the whole charity of dung beetles. You know, like the unsexy charities and how we should think about them too.
Yep. And I also enjoy like in both of those books, I enjoy books where they're set somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm never going to go anywhere else ever again. So
yeah. So, thank you, Jenny, for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Addie, for doing this interview.
Thanks, Addie.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourneedsblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.